Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of four episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
I want to thank you for listening and for all your support as we at Death, Sex, and Money have made our move to Slate. Your stories, voice memos, and emails have meant so much to the team. As part of this transition, there's a new way to support our show financially at Slate, our new home, and you'll get something special in return. Subscribe to Slate Plus, and you'll not only support our work on Death, Sex, and Money, you'll get access to new benefits, including listening to us and all of the other great shows Slate makes, like Slow Burn and Decoder Ring, without any ads or sponsor breaks. To subscribe, just click Try Free at the top of the Death, Sex, and Money show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/DSM+ to get access wherever you listen. Thanks.
When I asked for help, my mom dropped everything. And so when my mom had said that they were having trouble and they needed help, I figured it would be better for us to just be here and make a life here.
This is Death, Sex, and Money.
You're a virgin who can't drive.
The show from WNYC about the things we think about a lot.
You don't care, they're counting on your tips to live.
And need to talk about more.
If you don't give me one good reason to keep living, I'm gonna do this.
I'm Anna Sale. Just a year ago, the Minnesota-based band Communist Daughter was on the road. They were promoting their second full-length album, stopping at clubs, radio stations, and festivals across the country. But driving from gig to gig, their lead singer, Johnny Solomon, was worried. A few months earlier, he'd gone to visit his mom and her husband outside San Diego. His wife, Molly, came too. She also sings in the band.
It became more and more evident that they really did need somebody close by.
She said, like half crying, that, that they needed help.
Did your mom specifically say, what do you think about spending more time out here, being here full time for a period?
Yeah, it didn't come off that nicely.
Yeah, she was like, it's time.
You guys want some coffee? Do you want some donuts?
We met Johnny and Molly not on the road, but at the two-bedroom bungalow in California that they now share with Johnny's mom, Nancy, and her husband, Hugh. Hugh has dementia, and Nancy has a degenerative nerve disease that's similar to multiple sclerosis. Johnny and Molly have become their live-in caregivers.
Like, we're living in a guest room out of suitcases still.
So your clothes aren't in drawers.
No, we've created...
we've done what we could out of, you know...
At my dresser right now is I took out all of Nancy's files in her...
So a file
she
cabinet.
Has, it's like a file cabinet made out of wicker, though. And so, yeah, that's my...
It doesn't feel like we...
Dresser.
We tour so much, or we did tour so much that, you know, we're used to living out of small spaces and suitcases.
Johnny sent us an email shortly after they moved to California last summer. He wrote, "It put our career, our music, my whole existence into a no man's land. My wife and I made our money touring, but now we can't really tour. My band and manager are all trying to figure out how the music goes on, or if it does."
And I recognized this CD.
Yeah.
Mom has to have CDs.
We sat in their open living room, where Johnny's mom, Nancy, has a big recliner that rotates around so she can keep watch on what's going on throughout the house. Molly and Johnny and I squeezed in around her.
I feel like we're having a huddle right here, because we're all We're all gathered around Lean. Right?
Yeah. Now we should all put our arms in.
Nancy told me her illness makes it hard to move around much.
It takes all my energy, so I can't do as much. So it's been a very difficult, because I was a very active person.
Mm-hmm. Growing up, she was the alpha female, you know, I mean, she's still the boss. She just now sits in her throne the whole time.
Well, I kind of manipulate her.
That's something that Molly had to get used to. Mom has this way of like bossing you around, but in a way that you can tell that she cares, but it'll be like, you know, like, move that box, sit right there, move that chair over here, you know, and it's like, she cares, but it comes out as mom is in charge.
Having four kids did it.
Yeah. Having four kids did it, Nancy said. Nancy is tall and broad-shouldered like her son. She's a psychiatrist, one of the only women in her medical school class. She still works part-time at a local mental health clinic, where she used to work full-time before her symptoms got worse. She was getting ready for a shift when I visited, but generally her schedule is less busy these days.
Like Friday, she has her hair appointment, and but then, you know, like, we come back and she's mostly here in this chair. So we're kind of running around, and when she needs something, fetching something.
And we keep one person in the house. One person. Yeah, because I've fallen before. If I fall, I can't get up.
Johnny told me that of all his siblings, he was in the best position to come out to help. But he was not always someone that Nancy could rely on.
I think Mom has seen a huge change in me as a person in the last few years.
There has been a change, a very comfortable change.
Throughout his 20s and early 30s, as Johnny's music career was taking off and he was running a promising new restaurant near Minneapolis, he struggled with substance abuse and undiagnosed mental illness. It tested his relationships with everyone in his life, including his mom.
She was always still, like, loved me no matter what I did. And because I was a meth addict. I was alcohol and meth. And, you know, people see... they see it from the outside, but it's impossible to explain it from the inside of what it does to your soul, what it does to every part of you. Where, I mean, I could lie all the time. I could do just this part, this dark part of me was just all of me, and I did really terrible things to the people I loved.
And one time when he was here.
He was
yelling at me and disrespectful.
Yeah, I was cussing at everybody, and yeah, Molly was here for that too.
And when you say you were using meth, like, is it something you would buy? Were you ever making it?
I always bought it. There was a period for about 2 years I was using it every day. And I would buy it and smoke it or eat it or snort it. But then, I was spending, I don't know, $600-$700 a week maybe on it.
Did you have that money?
I found that money. I mean, I at the time I had a restaurant, which probably would have done really well because it was good food.
You got top 10...
Best new restaurants in Midwest Living Magazine.
Midwest, maybe.
So when you say you found that money, was it money that should have gone to other things, or money that you got from other people?
Money that I should have gone for other things. It was like in the budget of the restaurant to make sure that I had, you know, about $600 a week that I would take out in cash. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's very unpleasant to think about.
This was in 2010, when the band was promoting their first record and starting to have a lot of success. Johnny was falling apart. That became clear one night when the band was playing a big show in Minneapolis.
I got on stage and I was a disaster. It was rough.
It was embarrassing.
I was high and drunk, and I mean, I was heavy. I was
we started sores singing
on my
the
face.
Song.
Yeah. And to the point where, like, you know, and I think most people knew there was something wrong with me. And I ended up, I had called my mom and I was like, I can't wait any longer. You know, this is, I'm like, I'm at the bottom. And if it gets any lower, it's going to get way worse.
Why was it your mom that you called?
I don't know. Maybe because that's the last person that would take my call. And I'd asked her for help so many times and she never said no. Even though so many people in my life had started saying no. And I just knew that, and I knew what, when I called her, I knew what I was asking for. And I knew that she was the one who was, you know, she would know when I was serious. And so she knew that I was asking for help for real.
If you didn't get help, it was over.
Yeah. I mean,
that was in his voice.
Yeah, I had nothing left, and I suddenly couldn't write songs anymore. And that's when I realized, like, oh, like, God's going to take everything away from me unless I do something. So that's when I called my mom.
As a physician, we always sent our physicians, when they got in trouble, to Hazleton. It was just something we did. And we thought they did a good job. So I insisted that he had to go to Hazleton. And he did.
Did you help him pay for that? Did you pay for the treatment?
Yes. It's death, sex, and money, Mom. So we got to talk about all of them.
Yes. It took most of my retirement. You know, it was not all of it, but it took a big...
It was an investment.
Yes, it was a wonderful investment.
Johnny went to rehab at a Hazleton Betty Ford Treatment Center in Minnesota for 45 days. Coming up, I talk with Johnny and Molly about how his sobriety changed the dynamics of their band and made him surprisingly suited for caregiving.
People who know me know that I love things that only old people should love. I'm a big fan of The Golden Girls and Murder, She Wrote and Going to Bed Early.
We keep hearing from you about our series about class called Opportunity Cost and all the feelings those episodes are bringing up for you. We've been thinking about ways to keep that conversation going. And last week, Frederick McKendra, an emerging writer fellow at BuzzFeed, asked us this.
Come across any good reading lists spotlighting books on class in America? Should one exist, maybe?
We passed that idea on to you over Twitter and in our newsletter, and you all have a lot of ideas. Several of you have recommended the novel An American Marriage by Tayari Jones. I recommended a collection of essays and stories called Tales of Two Americas. Frederick suggested Barbara Ehrenreich's book Fear of Falling, and a listener named Elizabeth added the book Sleeping Giant, How the New Working Class Will Transform America. To add a book to our recommended reading on class, send us an email at deathsexmoney@wnyc.org. We'll share this reading list on class in next week's newsletter. So if you're not signed up already, go to deathsexmoney.org/newsletter to subscribe. On the next episode, veteran-turned-comedian Tom Tran talks about being shot 4 days into his deployment in Iraq and catching the whole thing on camera.
I said, I'm going to videotape this for my dad to show him, you know, what Iraq looks like. So the video camera just rolled. And on the tape, you hear my interpreter say, this is a bad place. And no sooner did he said that, bullets start flying. And on the tape, you hear crack, 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 crack.
This episode is brought to you by Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he will chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing.
Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We have had a lot of exciting new things to share with you about the show recently, but this might be some of our biggest news yet. Death, Sex, and Money is officially going to be live in New York City at the Tribeca Festival on June 11th. And I want to personally invite you to the live taping we'll be doing with the legendary journalist Kara Swisher. If you know Kara's work, you know her ability to get people to tell her things is unmatched. And she does it in her signature, hard-charging way. She's not afraid of things getting a little combustible. I have a slightly different interview style, so we're going to talk about that and play around with that in experimental ways that I think will make this a special show unlike any of our other live shows up to this point. And it's not often that I get to do a live Death, Sex, and Money show in New York, so I really hope to see you there. Whether you're in the city, on the East Coast, or just been looking for a reason to visit New York City, come on June 11th for this show. You can get tickets now at tribecafilm.com/deathsexmoney. We are so excited to see you there. This is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. I'm Anna Sale. While Johnny Solomon was in rehab 7 years ago, his band Communist Daughter got their first major nationwide exposure. Grey's Anatomy used some of their music in an episode, including this song, Soundtrack to the End.
We put on a pretty face, and we never saved our money. And then we got stuck in place, and I lost my milk and honey.
So did you actually saw like Grey's Anatomy and heard your song playing
in treatment? Yeah.
Were you in like a group room?
That's exactly what.
Yeah, you have to ask to use the TV or to have.
We have to watch Grey's Anatomy, and everyone gets to vote on what they're gonna watch. And it was neat, too, because when you're in treatment, you're with all these different people from all different walks of life. And, there's a little bit of it's like, I'm a musician. Oh, who are you? And it's like, you probably never heard of me. But now you've heard of me. Look, I'm on Grey's Anatomy.
And some of the best of us are already home, still singing softly through the stereo.
While he was in rehab, Johnny was also diagnosed as bipolar. His mom, Nancy, a psychiatrist, knew that was in their family history, but she didn't think Johnny was affected.
I didn't think it was in my genes or didn't think about it. So, this is sad, but if they're on medication, they're just as normal as everybody else.
Do you find yourself like doing clinical check-ins of Johnny? Like, do you sort of like...
Yes, she does.
I try not to. I mean, I think it always, because of my training, I can't say I don't.
She asks me a lot about how much I sleep.
That's probably true, I have to say.
It's totally fine.
Yeah, I have, all through my training, when I'm meeting with couples and things like that, a lot of times I have told them, okay, 18... your children are their own. They're no longer yours, and you have to let them go. And you do kind of cry about it because you've spent all this time. But they have to have that choice. So I was so fortunate when one decided that I was a close part of his life.
It was time for Nancy to leave to see patients at the clinic. Johnny helped her out the door.
Are you going to your
cane.
I've got your cane.
Okay.
Johnny is 39 now. Molly, his wife, is 32. It's not clear how long they'll have to live out here in Southern California. And that's caused a lot of uncertainty at a time when they really want to be planning for the future.
I mean, it could be like a year of our life. It could be 10 years of our life.
What was the conversation like between you two when you were, when it was first brought up about the possibility of moving out here full time?
Honestly, I was pretty hesitant to get on the bandwagon there. Because all my, you know, my whole family lives in Minnesota and we're pretty close, and all my friends. And also it was coming up on the time where we were starting to talk about kids. And my whole thing was like, I can't be away from my mom when I, that was something that was like really important to me. I don't know. Also, my parents are, they're a lot younger than John's. So I just wasn't really thinking about that yet.
Johnny, though, has been looking for a change for a while. Since getting sober, life as a touring musician has become harder.
I start getting really, I get really angry. I get really short. I feel really lonely, even though, like, we're, you know, I'm surrounded by people the whole time. It's really hard to describe. And, you know, sometimes the thing that's tough is that, like, I'm sober and I'm bipolar and I have to be surrounded by drunk, you know, fun-loving party, you know, rolling through every town. And it's, like, the last thing I want to do and the last thing that's good for me.
Well, it sounds like such a contrast to your routine now.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I love routine. I love it because when things get out of control, then I start to really lose control. And we had always, when we were on tour, we'd always stop and stay in San Diego. And it felt like this real, it felt like this magical place where for 2 weeks out of our very hectic and sometimes very stressful life, we got to spend 2 weeks in San Diego having, you know, like eating oranges off the tree.
It was like a vacation, yeah.
And so, like, it to me, it was always like, wouldn't this be great if we just moved to San Diego for a little bit? It would be this huge life shift where we'd have to decide what we were doing with our life.
You know, it strikes me that, like, figuring out different ways to make money at, you know, sort of an earlier, like, having a kind of, like, in your 30s, is this music thing going to work out? Do I need to make money another way? You all have an extreme version of that. But I guess, I imagine you have peers who have gone through similar sort of, like, is this going to happen or is this not? And do we need to come up with a different plan?
Yeah. And, you know, I think that, you know, our idea of success when you're in your 20s, you just think things will figure themselves out. If I do what I love, things will figure themselves out. And now in my 30s, my late 30s, it's like, oh, well, yeah, everyone knew you can't make money at music. Like, everyone knows that, you know? And so I'm at this age now where it's like, if I don't figure something else out, what else am I going to do? You know, like, am I going to be the guy who learned to play, you know, Irish folk tunes so I could, you know, do it Wednesdays at the local Irish pub or something, you know, like... But I don't know. So, like, I luckily I've started to, like, what I thought would feel like kind of soul sucking by looking somewhere else starts to feel actually kind of freeing.
Molly and Johnny are living rent free now as they figure out what's next. Johnny's started taking online grad school classes to become a substance abuse counselor. Molly told me she was applying for pharmacy tech jobs. Their band, Communist Daughter, is still officially together, but they told me it feels like it's on hiatus. Most of their time is spent taking care of Johnny's mom and her husband. And they know that will only escalate, especially as Nancy's illness progresses.
It is the thing with my mom where it's funny how, like, 90% of the time, like, when I wake up in the morning and I look at my day, it looks like I don't have anything to do. But as soon as you step out of that door, it could be like, oh, you know, mom has to go to a doctor now. Or, you know, like, suddenly something happened with the bank and I've got to run there. And so even though you have all this, like, you think you're going to have free time, you know, you kind of have to be your schedule has to be kind of open.
Is she able to move in and out of the bathroom on her own?
It's hard. It's really hard. It like wears her out so much. So it is probably going to get to that point pretty soon, and we're not sure.
We've talked about maybe having somebody come in, you know, mm-hmm. once a week or, yeah. you know, for bathing.
But I do, you know, sometimes I have to help her put on articles of clothing or, you know, put on, well, pretty much every, you know, her jewelry, I have to put that on. She can't reach up high and her hands shake, so.
And then there's, you know, just the things of like, Mom, you can't walk around. You can't, you know, you're going to fall over. You're going to knock things over. So you end up like having these conversations where it's like, you can't, no, like I'm going to pour your soy sauce. And she's like, you know, a very smart, very,
right,
you
right.
know, and she was the boss for so long. And now I'm telling her she can't pour her own soy sauce because.
It is funny how those roles get reversed and it's been a learning experience.
I think being out here has been interesting because it forces Molly's had to, you know, be vocal about certain things, especially with my mom's way of dealing with things.
Yeah, it actually has been good because it's like making me a stronger person.
Give me an example. Making me like, more. Can you think of something?
I'm a very like I'll go out of my way to do something nice kind of a person, which I don't know. That sounds so weird saying that out loud. But there have been times when, you know, I don't finish my breakfast or it gets cold because I have to, you know, help her do something that actually isn't very important and it can totally wait. Like I've learned to be like, actually, I'm eating my breakfast right now. So is it okay if I throw away the newspaper for you later?
She's so bossy about the way she says.
Would you mind setting that on the counter next to you? Or, you know,
yeah.
I love that, thinking about that being like, I get to say, can I please finish my breakfast? Yeah. Like talking yourself into that.
Yeah. And she's gotten a lot better though.
Yeah.
Because you've pointed out those things to her so often.
It's weird now because it's becoming more of like, I feel more like a parent where I catch myself being, I don't know. Well, I know what kind of parent maybe I'll be. I'll be the, like.
Really? It's like a little glimpse into that?
Yeah. And it's the things, it's like not the good things. It's the things that like, oh, this is going to really fluster me.
Do you feel like you found a community at all here, Molly? Yeah.
No, I haven't. But I kind of, I'm kind of enjoying it in a way, like just having a lot of free time, or at least, yeah, like John says, you expect to have free time. It's funny how that changes throughout the day, but I don't know. It's just such a different, it's such a difference out here. You know, you don't have a community and you don't have friends and you don't have.
We have some friends that we met through being on tour that like some musicians and some people that came to some shows.
We haven't hung out with them still.
Yeah. But they're in, once. You know, we're up here like in this kind of retirement little area and, you know, so it's like a 40-minute drive to go hang out with them. And we would, but it's also, I got to be back here every night to make dinner and, you know, you can't miss your shows. I'm watching a lot of TV right now.
What have been your strategies to have privacy as a couple?
Oh.
Well, we have decided that once a month, we'll have like a date night where we...
Once a month.
And we'll go away to like a hotel or something.
And then every once in a while, like they'll go out to eat dinner. Yeah, I think even if they don't want to, they'll go out, you know, once every couple weeks.
Yeah.
Which is still then like, we're looking at once every 2 weeks. But, you know, we talked about, like, this is a time in our life where we want to talk about starting a family. And so it becomes like, how are we going to do that here? You know, you don't want to be changing diapers on both sides of things. It's this weird, morbid conversation that you have to have where you have to be like, well, will they die before we, you know, get pregnant so then we could go back to Minnesota? And that's like such a weird thing to like, to be like, well, we don't hope that.
No,
we don't,
not at all.
But it's like, could we make it work if, you know, if Molly gets pregnant out here, would she resent me and, you know, like, I don't know. It was just a lot of conversations where when it came down to it, it was just like, this is what felt like we had to do, because if we didn't do it, what's the other option?
Man, I hate this town, so I'm looking for the only way out. And the life I wanted years ago is maybe not the life I should have found.
That's Johnny and Molly Solomon and the Communist Daughter song, Speed of Sound. Since I visited, Nancy's health has continued to decline. She's now not able to work at all. Johnny's doing an internship at the mental health clinic where his mom used to work, and Molly has a job working at a local pharmacy. They've decided to put off trying to get pregnant for at least a year. Death, Sex, and Money is a listener-supported production of WNYC Studios in New York. I'm based at the Center for Investigative Reporting in Emeryville, California. Our team includes Katie Bishop, Annabelle Bacon, Emily Botine, and Andrew Dunn. Our interns are Catherine Hsu and Angeli Mercado. Thanks to Will Huntsbury for his help on this episode. The Reverend John Delore and Steve Lewis wrote our theme music. I'm on Twitter at Anna Sale, and you can find the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Death Sex Money. Johnny and Molly did tell me that they're doing some writing for a third Communist Daughter album. But when it comes out, doing any publicity for it might be a challenge.
We gave an interview where they wanted to do it a Skype interview. And we set it up outside because it was so beautiful. But Hugh kept walking
back and forth,
behind us, like picking up dog poop.
Yeah, right behind us.
I'm Anna Sale, and this is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC.